Welcome to a podcast of the Mike Novak Show. Don't forget that you can listen to Mike live on Sundays from 8 to 10 a.m. on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Don't tread on them.
No.
No, but don't vote for the budget. Same way, can't vote for the budget. If you have the courage, then stand up and say, I want the CTA to bypass my ward. You'll last about a half a day. They'll have to sign 911 police and fire to protect you and your families.
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on South Pulaski Road, just across the street from the 53A bus stop and in between Paco's Tacos and Zaka Tacos, it's the Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast green, gardening, and environment program. Heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Planets are in the main.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees, and by Sid's Greenhouses, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, and by WRD Environmental, creating sustainable landscapes for today and tomorrow. He's 100% green, and we had to special order his concealer. Here he is, Mike Novak.
This is The Daily Show with John
Mike Novak.
Yeah, it is. This is kind of The Daily Show, a little tribute there to Mayor Richard M. Daley, who, as we all know, is leaving office in a few months. However, he is still the mayor of the city of Chicago, and we will bring that up later in the program. Two full hours here this morning talking about the mayor's green legacy for the last 21, 22 years, whatever exactly the numbers are. And the reason I'm doing this, obviously, is because my show is a green show. It's a gardening show. It's an environmental show. But also a bit of frustration that I have had watching the media cover Daley's leaving office, and very few of them have called attention to what he's done environmentally in the city of Chicago. And I thought, well, you know what? That's my job, I guess. This is what I have to do. So I have an all-star lineup here in the studio and on the phone today. I hope you'll stick with us for the entire 2 hours. Weigh in, 773-838-9278, 773-838-WCPT. If you have questions or comments, it doesn't matter whether you live in the city of Chicago. I'm sure you people around here have strong opinions about Mayor Daley, whether or not they live in the city. But we're going to confine it to the environment. We're not going to talk about who's running, basically. I mean, we may allude to it. Some names may come up. Part of the point of this is to see what the mayor started with, what he gave the city in 20 years in the realm of the environment and green living. And then at some point, I think in January, look at the people who are still in the race, and they're dropping like flies from what I can see. We'll look at the people who are still in the race for mayor and talk about holding on to those gains or doing better if certain things weren't realized under the Daley regime. Today in the studio, I happen to have Beth Botts, who, if you listen to the show, is a regular contributor. She has co-hosted, she has hosted the show. She's written for the Chicago Tribune for 20 years. She has her own blog called Growing in Chicago. And if you go to my website, MikeNovak.net, and go to this week's show, there's a link to a post she put up just the other day. It's really interesting, Beth. It's called How Green Will Chicago Be After Daley? And you kind of go on at length and you tried to get everything in at once, and you think it's a little scattered. I think it's actually very, very good. It covers a lot of the issues.
Well, I think that, like a lot of people, even people who are totally on board with all this environmental stuff, I can't help but have mixed feelings about Daley. It's obvious to me that he's made huge changes in the city. I've sometimes been taken aback by the way he went about doing that.
As we will talk about.
And I've also there are obvious places where he hasn't made the changes in the city that the city needed. And I think we're going to talk about all of that today.
That's Beth Botts. Also in the studio with me right now is Christy Weber, who runs one of the largest landscape companies in the city of Chicago, Christy Weber Landscapes. How you doing, Christy?
I'm good. How are you, Mike?
Great. It's always good to have you here. And, you know, I have to ask you, Christy, please don't be shy.
Okay. All right, no.
That's not a problem with Christy Weber. Also, later in the program, we're going to have Mick Dumke, another friend of the show. He's a staff writer for the Chicago News Cooperative. He used to write for the Chicago Reader and the Chicago Reporter. He will join us in the second hour. Also in the second hour, Irma Tranter, who is the president of Friends of the Parks. Also in the second hour, Kim Wasserman Yato, who is the coordinator for the Little Village Environmental Justice Organization. As you can see, I've tried to get, you know, you can't get it perfect because there's so many people in different positions who could comment on the green legacy in Chicago. But I've tried to get a wide range of people who can speak to different issues. And among them are the two men on the phone as well. And on line one, we have Henry Henderson, who is the director of the Midwest Program for the Natural Resources Defense Council in Chicago. He was the founding commissioner of the Department of the Environment for the city of Chicago. And you probably see his name if you read the Huffington Post, because he comments regularly there. Good morning, Henry.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
It's my pleasure to have you on. And then on line two, let me do that right. There we go. I have Alderman Joe Moore from the 49th Ward, the fighting 49th. And always great to have you on the show, Joe.
It's great to be on. Hello, everybody.
And those two gentlemen are kind of going to get us started here. I wanted to start actually with you, Henry, because you were there at the beginning in the Department of the Environment. And before you became the head of it, there really wasn't a Department of the Environment, was there?
Yeah, that's correct. There really wasn't. So it was one of the things that Mayor Daley really thought through is, you know, you don't have an entity within the city whose major job is trying to promote environmental issues. And at a time when the city was really under massive assault from massive amounts of illegal dumping, huge amounts of abandoned industrial property that people didn't want to touch because of perceived environmental problems, and a federal government that was essentially looking at cities as, basically sacrifice zones. So one of the things the mayor thought is that the city of Chicago needs an entity whose major interest is treating the city like a natural habitat for humans.
I guess that gets us off the ground here. It's the question. I chatted with Josh Morgerman the other day,
right,
who you work with at the NRDC, and my question to him was, you know, was Mayor Daley the accidental environmentalist, or was this all planned and the way it developed? Because when Daley was elected in 1989. I don't think anybody saw this coming, the environmental side of him. He certainly didn't campaign on it. And then suddenly, as we get into the 90s, he's planting trees. I think that's the first thing that people noticed, the mayor's planting trees.
Yeah, I think that, and I think a lot of his legacy is kind of revealed in that, is that how do you actually make an investment within a community that people can see? And trees are a way to do that. And I think he has and has always had kind of an organic sense of the greening of the city shows a concern about your street, your neighborhood, and the city as a whole. And I think that's part of what his entire effort has been, is how do you cultivate where we live, where people really live, as part of the environment. I think a number of things followed from that. But the first and foremost part, and was really the thrust of Department of Environment at the time when it was formed, was how do you reverse a trend of massive attack on where people live? The city was awash in illegal dumping from fly dumpers who were leaving things in abandoned lots or in back of alleys and just fleeing, and the city was a magnet for this throughout the entire region. And some of the ideas of redevelopment of the city were things like turning the place into gigantic landfills for the entire region, that the highest and best use of places like the southeast side with all the abandoned steel infrastructure was to turn it into massive landfills. And that was unacceptable. And I think we go back to the 1980s and 90s, where cities were under attack, and I think this is part of what Daley attempted to do, is how do we reverse this? And things that were revolutionary at the time have now become kind of commonplace.
I'd like to go to Alderman Joe Moore also, and hold this thought, Christy and Beth, because when we talk about trees, we talk about the horticultural industry. And Beth, you've been a garden writer forever, and Christy, you run a company that deals with that and how that's affect the horticultural industry. But I want to go to Joe Moore at the moment, because you were an alderman. You had just become alderman in 91. What, from the city council point of view, what did you see happening, and did you feel like the city council was behind the efforts the mayor was proposing?
Well, I think like all of us, we evolve over time, and I think, Mike, as you pointed out, the mayor, the environment was not number one in his consciousness when he campaigned for mayor in 83 and again in 89 when he got elected. However, I think once he got in office and he traveled the world and he picked up experiences from other cities, I believe that he became more conscious of the important role the environment plays in the life and health of the city. And so I was very pleasantly surprised that he formed the Department of Environment, and even more pleasantly surprised that he picked Henry to be its first commissioner, because Henry has a very long and distinguished record as an advocate for the environment. So I was thrilled when he did that, and it did not come from the city council. The city council is not known for being a hotbed of environmentalism. it came from the mayor, and I've got to give him credit for that. He's had a very enviable record on the environment in many ways, and at the same time, he's had some very major shortcomings. It's sort of like the best and worst of everything.
Henry, when you were talking about the mayor intervening to improve the environment in all the neighborhoods in the city, I was thinking about some of the criticism that I've heard of Daley in the last few weeks and in the last couple of days since I put up that blog post in particular. People say,
you just got a compliment there, Beth. I don't know if you.
Oh, that was a compliment?
Yeah, he says.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Well, thank you. But one of the things you hear people say a lot is, okay, it's all about downtown. You know, yeah, downtown looks great, and yeah, there's all this green stuff downtown, and yeah, there's all this green stuff on the lakefront. But, meanwhile, nothing's happening in the neighborhoods. All this green stuff is just the mayor's hobby. It's just a bunch of sort of frippery that doesn't get at the basic needs of the neighborhoods. And I'd like to hear, what both of you guys have to say about that.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point. I think in some ways I think it's somewhat cliched. B, I also think it doesn't understand the nature of what the environmental makeup of a city is. I was just down in far southwest side on 129th in Peoria, which was a gigantic, gigantic problem in terms of abandoned industrial property, which was an affirmative threat to the community, where an old Dutch Boy plant was abandoned. It was filled with toxic levels of lead people would come in and start taking apart parts of the building. Highly contaminated dust would fly into the surrounding community. And it just sat there for years and years. And one of the things that the Daily legacy is looking at these areas as inappropriate residue, kind of a slash-and-burn mentality that you just leave cities abandoned in these areas. And now it is the largest solar generating station in any urban area in North America. And part of that is the legacy of the mayor's belief that these abandoned parts of the city are actually fully, fully capable of being massively productive within the environment. You've seen that with Wisconsin Steel in the 10th Ward. Same thing with LTV, where LTV left 179 acres of abandoned properties. Now, a huge supplier thing. So, well, I mean, you've got these are all reclaiming the environment.
Henry, Christy wants to make a comment there.
Sure. Sacramento crushing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Which is where?
Where my new building is.
Oh, right, right.
Absolutely.
Where the brownfield, that where the CCGT is, the Chicago Center for Green Technology.
That was an illegal dump, which was one of the things that Department of Environment did, was it prosecuted that.
Wasn't that where Mount Henry was?
Dump, and now it's the Center for Green Technology.
Yeah, Joe wanted to get a word in here. Joe, you were saying?
That was where Mount Henry was, and we're not talking Mount Henry Henderson. It was Mount Bill Henry, the alderman, right?
That was further west.
Okay.
Yeah.
It was a mountain, though, Joe. Believe me.
Well, you know,
if you don't know,
I think that criticism that you hear of the mayor, and as I think Henry said, it's kind of, you know, it becomes almost cliche. You know me, I'm not. I have never held back in calling the mayor when I think he's wrong.
We know that, Joe.
But I think I think that's an unfair criticism. He has been, you know, just looking at something as elemental as elementary as planting trees. You go through these boulevards anywhere in the city, and you see the median strips with the new trees going in, you know, and of course, as everyone mentioned, the cleanup of the waste dumps and other in neighborhoods throughout the city of Chicago. So I think that his emphasis has been on every citywide. Certainly downtown is an essential part of the city, but I think it's gone far beyond downtown in terms of beautification.
Look at Mike. Look at Pulaski right here when I got off the highway. That strip mall there would have never had landscaping if Daley weren't here.
Mm-hmm.
That one we drive by, that brand new strip mall, if you
right.
go off the highway.
Yeah.
All these strip malls would just be gravel and asphalt.
Yeah, but that's a really good point, because I don't remember exactly who I was talking to, but I think it was somebody associated with the city. And if it's somebody in the room or on the phone, forgive me, but they were saying that they had gotten a call recently after Mayor Daley announced he was not running, and they were dealing with something with the city, some sort of development. They said, does this mean I don't have to put a green roof up now?
Yeah, exactly.
And that's the mentality we're talking about.
That's
the people who say, it's like,
about.
Oh, God, we had to do that because the mayor wanted it. And now, boy, are we off the hook?
Right, exactly. And you know, that's one of the things that... First of all, one of the things that Daley has done, you know, especially downtown, he gets a lot of criticism for, you know, putting up all these flower pots and forcing people to put up flower pots. And I really feel like one of the most important things that Daley's done is sort of raise the game, raise the standard for what the built environment in the city, all over the city, has to be. It's not just that we have... the median planters on Michigan Avenue across from the Art Institute. But if you're putting in a strip mall on Pulaski Road, it has to have something green in it. And that sort of raises the standard for, you know, what the environment of the whole city has to be like.
It's a quality of life issue.
It's a quality of life issue. And, you know, Christy can talk about
us.
That.
Christy's,
yeah.
Christy's been, you know, involved in that. You know, Christy,
the
expansion.
South side, west side, I hate when people talk about downtown.
Right.
Because there's a lot of stuff going around, but it's very easy to just complain.
Yeah.
And complain and complain. I mean, I think they're getting ready to build a new median right down Sacramento. So right over by Humboldt Park. So, you know, probably one of the first in the last couple of years they've got it all cordoned off. I'm not sure.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I saw. Well, yeah. Part of it is the traffic. I live in that area, and part of it is the traffic problem. It's so dangerous. People
cross.
It's treated as a superhighway, and people are driving down there. So I'm glad they narrowed it to two lanes.
Doesn't it look like they're going to build a median?
I don't know. Maybe they will. For right now, I think it's just a traffic flow. Alderman Joe Moore, do you have any idea on this? I know it's not your ward.
No, I don't offhand. But, yeah. Again, at the risk of sounding as an apologist for the mayor, I mean, he's sort of damned if he does, damned if he doesn't. If he builds the planters and the median strips in the neighborhoods, then he's blamed for spending on planters rather than other needs. And if he doesn't pay attention to the neighborhoods, then he's accused of ignoring the neighborhoods. So,
true. You know, we've been really, really nice to him so far, and we're 24 minutes into the show.
I'm sure, Mike, you'll bring up some issues with
controversy. I do need to break shortly. I just want to let everybody know who's here. Beth Botts is in the studio, award-winning writer, garden writer, 20 years on the Tribune, and Christy Weber from Christy Weber Landscapes on the phone. We have Alderman Joe Moore from the 49th Ward and Henry Henderson from the Natural Resources Defense Council, who is the founding commissioner of the Department of the Environment for the City of Chicago. When we come back, let's go in a different direction, and I think recycling, we need to talk a little bit about recycling. I do want to get back at some point to the horticultural industry, because at some point during the show we will, because Mayor Daley has had a huge impact on that community and has brought a lot of dollars to it, and we need to get back to that as well. By the way, call us 773-838-9278 if you have a comment or a question. Don't forget, you can tweet us. Beth, you're up and running on Twitter right now at
Chicago Gardener.
And if you want to tweet me, it's Mike Now on Twitter. And we will be back to our guests in just a second. This is not NPR, so I got to keep my advertisers happy. Bobex wants you to disguise your spring bulbs before you plant them this fall. We're not talking about putting glasses, a false nose, and a mustache on them. That's probably not going to work. Or it might. We're talking about dunking them in Bobex R. The Bobex R formula creates an aromatic barrier around the bulb and prevents critters like voles and squirrels from discovering them. Now, it's easy to do. Immerse spring blooming bulbs in concentrated Bobex R right out of the bottle. Allow bulbs to soak for 3 to 5 minutes. Remove the bulbs from the concentrate and allow them to air dry. Then pop those babies in the ground. Bobex is harmless to humans. That's the way I do it. I just pop them in the ground. Bobex is harmless to humans, pets, birds, and aquatic life. It contains no petrochemicals, and it's made from natural and recycled ingredients. Of course, always read and follow label directions. Bobex is available only at your local independent garden center, and you can always order it online. And if you call Bobex, you're going to talk to a real, live human being. Unbelievable. You can find Bobex products at Pesquazy Home and Gardens in Lake Bluff, Illinois, Geimer Greenhouse in Long Grove, Illinois, Hager's Country Market in Barrington, Illinois. Remember, plants thrive and survive with Bobex.
Hey, gardeners. Want to be inspired? Make plans to visit Cantini Gardens in Wheaton, the 500-acre former estate of Robert R. McCormick. Cantini isn't just beautiful, it's a horticultural masterpiece. Stroll through the spectacular formal gardens created by renowned landscape architect Franz Lipp and marvel at the sheer variety of annuals, perennials, ground covers, trees, and shrubs. You'll love Cantini's Idea Garden, Rose Garden, and Native Prairie, too. Cantini has something for everyone, including museums, picnic area, gift shop, and restaurants. Plan your visit today at cantini.org.
Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. The Care of Trees and I keep hammering this point, and I'm sure that the horticulturists in the room will agree. It's been a dry autumn, and you need to make sure that your trees and shrubs are getting hydrated to prepare them for the winter months ahead. If you planted trees this year, or if they're 1 or 2 years old, they might be experiencing drought stress. A lot of folks forget that even if a tree has lost its leaf, the root system is still active. Our advice, get out the drip hose, lay it at the base of your trees and shrubs, and let it trickle for as long as a couple of hours, especially for trees, a little longer for them. Evergreens in particular need to be hydrated, as they can continue to lose moisture through their needles throughout the winter. Either of you want to comment on that? Are you getting the drip hose out, Christy, with the stuff you're putting in the ground?
Well, I always just tell everybody to water everything until they can't water anymore.
Yeah, I say, you know, if it's Thanksgiving and it's still, the ground is not frozen, go out there, put the turkey in the oven, and go put the drip hose out. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, and you know, it's been so warm, it's been too warm to plant my bulbs, but I have been out there digging around, and the soil is really, really dry in my garden. So I've been watering a lot.
There you go. Make the Care of Trees your permanent partner in enhancing the value of your landscape. Whether you want to make sure all is well with the trees in your yard, you're changing your landscaping, or you're moving, invite the certified arborists at the Care of Trees to take a look. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees.
And now the end is near, and so I face the final curtain.
Yeah, you know I had to play this. Of course, what we got to remember here is, and it's important to remember, he's not dead. You know,
no,
he's not.
And he's also a lame duck. So he can basically, a few days after he said he wasn't running, he announced that he agreed that we should reverse the Chicago River.
Thank God.
I mean, he's a lame duck. He's got nothing to lose by saying anything or doing anything. So we should keep a good good watch on City Hall for the next few months.
I think it's
going to
be a real, because we're in a it's very interesting because we're going to have Alderman Moore. I'm wondering how City Council is going to react to all this, of course. As Beth has just pointed out, Beth Botts, Mayor Daley, what has he got to lose at this point by doing things? And I think things are going to happen. There are some things that he's going to accomplish before he leaves office. And one of them might be, actually, this is a great segue. We have a couple of minutes. I have to get to weather in a second. We'll do that quickly. But let's start the conversation about recycling. I have to, in the full disclosure, tell you that I'm the president of the Chicago Recycling Coalition, so I have a very particular attitude towards this. Alderman Joe Moore, I know you've been a big recycling advocate, and wouldn't you love to have blue carts in your ward?
I would love to have blue carts in my ward, and I, you know, we talked a lot in the first portion of the show about, I think, some of the accomplishments that the mayor has made in the environment, and now we're turning our attention to probably one of the biggest blots on his environmental record, and that's recycling. The city wasted 15 years pursuing a program that was flawed from the start, the blue bag program, to try to convince people that to put all the recycling in a blue bag and that it would be thrown in with the rest of the trash in a compactor, and somehow that was called recycling. Well, no one bought it. No one participated in it. Those of us who were in the city council back in the early 90s when this was first proposed joined forces with organizations like the Chicago Recycling Coalition and other environmentalists and decried the proposal, said it wasn't going to work, and unfortunately we were proven right. I wish I was wrong. And by the time we finally began implementing something that suburban communities and other major cities across the nation have done, which is a blue cart program, or a blue bin program some communities have, the city ran out of money. So we're about one-third of the way implementing it, and now we have a city of haves and have-nots.
Well, and that doesn't even count high-rises, multi-unit buildings.
We're just talking about people who live in housing units of buildings of four units or less, five units or less, that get to enjoy the city pickups.
All right, so that takes us. You knew this was coming, Henry. Henry Henderson from the NRDC, who was the commissioner of the Department of the Environment at the time that Blue Bag was initiated. Okay, here's your forum. Tell me why it was done, and that's my question. Why was this done?
Well, I think that part of, let's start off with the recognition that the fact that it is disastrous that we have no recycling program in the city of Chicago. It's a major problem, major failure, and I think part of what we need to be looking at is how do you move forward and how do you make recycling relevant to the future of the city? I think one of the thrust behind the program was how could we get control of Chicago's waste stream, which is huge and was simply immured within the Department of Streets and Sanitation. How could you get a reformulation of the way the city went about dealing with waste? And at the time, when the blue bag program was put out there, nobody could actually tell you in the city of Chicago, and I think this may be the case even today, what it costs the city to move a ton of waste. It's not accountable for. And you had a series of transfer stations throughout the city that were highly contaminated. You had a really nasty waste incinerator on the west side, and you had a disastrous management of waste within the city. So part of the program was not simply a recycling program, but how do you get control over the entire amount of, you know, the billions of tons of waste generated within the city and consolidate it in a way where you could actually figure out where garbage was going so it didn't end up in empty lots, so it actually, you could figure out how much it cost, and that you could also remediate a series of stinking sites that were sitting in the middle of neighborhoods and attracting rats, which could feed a family of five. And I think that's part of what was attempted to be done, but the reality is that the recycling program is a legacy that remains a blocker.
Well, and of course we're all hoping that something will happen before the mayor leaves office in this regard. It's hard, you know, because there's been talk about privatization and there's talk about a fee, whatever.
Yeah, we don't pay enough for water, sewer, or garbage. That's the bottom line.
Well,
it's
the water thing
simple.
Is another. It's connected to it as well.
Yeah,
yes.
It's too
yes.
simple to, you know, once one thing, okay, the blue bag thing failed. I have blue carts. I'm one of the lucky ones in the first ward. So what? You know, I mean, everybody still throws all their garbage in it when somebody moves out. I mean, people need to be educated.
Well,
we're not Seattle.
Yeah.
And we're, you know, we're Chicago, and we have a lot of free services, or they seem almost free to us. And until we have to, like, put up or shut up, I mean, we don't really, I just can't see that no matter what the mayor does, that people are going to be good about recycling. The good recycling people are the good recycling people.
Well, Christy, if I can weigh in, Joe Moore here. You know, Seattle wasn't Seattle at one point.
No, we need to
right.
start.
People need to be educated. And one of the hindrances to educating people is that you have a city in which large sections of the city don't have recycling, two-thirds of it. And all of the city, if you live in a large multi-unit building, or you're a commercial business owner, a commercial enterprise, You don't have to do recycling at all.
I thought there was an ordinance in place that they had to do that.
Yeah, but no teeth, no enforcement.
Yeah, that's part of it.
There is no enforcement.
Well, then,
I think that's an incredibly important part of it.
You know,
enforcement.
I was on a task force the other year where a bunch of groups got together, business and waste and environmental groups, and we sat around a table, 30 of us, and tried to hammer this out, and nothing came of it. And at one point, Ken Dunn from
the Resource Center,
thank you, stood up and said, you know, the law we have now is not that bad if people would enforce it.
Well, it's one of the things we had in the Department of Environment. We actually had people who were given the job to go around and enforce this, and we actually did it, okay? And we would go to facilities, we would go to multifamily houses, we would check to see if they had recycling things available to people. We'd look at what the status of the recycling centers were. We'd actually sue people. And
which we don't do anymore.
Well, it was taken out of Department of Environment and put in Streets and San, which is dedicated to the proposition that waste is supposed to go into a disposal site.
Well, the thing about, you know, recycling is, as Christy said, unless the city has the will to just say, okay, we're going to do this, we're going to start doing this, and we're going to get people into the habit of doing this the way they did, you know, 20, 30 years ago out in DuPage County, so that it just becomes the culture of how you, part of the culture of how you live here. you know, is not going to happen. And I can't help but think that part of what was going on back in the 1990s when they decided to go to the blue bag instead of going to the blue boxes is that City Hall was not willing to inconvenience every household full of voters in the city.
Because you're saying, you're agreeing with Christy that it was not Seattle, it was Chicago, and these people, no. There was going to be a learning curve for them.
Sure, there would be a learning curve. They weren't going to be happy about it.
Every city that instituted recycling had to do a massive education program to get people, first of all, to learn how to do it, and secondly, to understand why it was important to do
right.
it.
Right.
Well,
Chicago's
never done that.
But they had to believe that it was going to a separate place. Do you believe that now? That your blue is going separate from your...
There's a lot of people who don't.
What happened. The blue bag took us down that road. So people do not believe it because it all went in one garbage truck.
Yeah.
So they still think the same of the blue cans.
They think recycling is a sham because that's what they were taught to believe by the blue bag program.
Right.
And I just want to clarify...
So now pay for the black one. Pay for the black one. Free for the blue ones. And off we go to the races.
All right. We need to break for weather here. I appreciate the spiritedness of the conversation. This is great. Henry Henderson is on the phone from the Natural Resources Defense Council. Alderman Joe Moore from the 49th. Hang on, you guys. We'll be back to you in a sec. Beth Botts is in studio along with Christy Weber. We will get back to this conversation. What are you doing later today? Well, if you don't have... you know, too many big plans. Today, it's, you know, the Bears might not be very good. Today is a great day to hit Lurvy Landscape and Garden Center in Des Plaines and stock up on Halloween goodies like pumpkins because today is the last day of Pink Week, which means that you get 10% off your total purchase if you wear something pink in honor of Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Lurvy's also has a wide selection of bulbs such as mums and pansies, cabbage and kale, and they will donate $3 from every purchase of the Invincible Spirit Hydrangea, it's a durable hot pink perennial, to the Breast Cancer Foundation. Another reason to go, today is the second and last day of Scarecrow Fest, which means brats on the grill, pony rides, train rides, and the chance to build your own scarecrow. Just bring the clothes and accessories. Don't throw away that flannel with bleach holes. A scarecrow out there is in need. The festivities go until 4 p.m. Lurvy's is located at 2550 East Dempster Street in Des Plaines. For more information, visit lurvys.com, lurvys.com. Be a gardener for life by shopping at Lurvy Landscape Supply and Garden Center today. Lurvy's a proud sponsor of the Breast Cancer Research Foundation. And we're going, you know, lots going on. It's 10-10-10 in the city of Chicago. We're going to line three. Hold on, let us... Oh, I just lost somebody. I lost them both. Get Rick back.
All you have left is the alderman.
At least I got the alderman. Let's get Henry. I just realized I had them all there, and I just erased them all. Okay, well, this one. Oh, dear. Okay, well, let me talk to you about the September-October issue of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. It's on the stands, and if you need, and you do need a copy of a Zone 5 garden, which is here in Chicago. In this issue, there are stories about two gardens that are a cut above the rest, one in Downers Grove and one in Elmhurst. I'm pleased to say that the Downers Grove garden is the handiwork of a couple of friends of this show, Mickey and Bruce Beckman. Miss Mickey, as she is known, has inspired kids to read for decades, and her garden inspires just about everybody else. In Elmhurst, Rob Abernathy and Peter Vamvikas, I hope I pronounced that correctly, they discovered that when you're restoring a vintage 1905 building, it brings out the best in neighbors who have contributed plants, building, renovation advice, and friendship. The result is a house and garden that are the pride of the community. The magazine has how-to articles, plenty of gardening advice, and of course, there's my column on the inside back page. Need I say more? Chicagoland Gardening Magazine is on newsstands all over the area, but why don't you have a subscription? Go to chicagolandgardening.com or call 888-265-3600. 888-265-3600. And I am so sorry, Rick DeMaio, that I hung up on you.
Oh, that's okay. You just gave me a few more seconds to cheer on somebody else coming down the south end of Michigan Avenue. You can probably hear the cowbells in the background, Mike. Hold on 1 second. I got to bring mine. There you go. I'm on the corner of Michigan and Roosevelt.
And you're part of the marathon, right?
Well, I'm helping out Lane Tech High School. My son's a junior. Is doing his community service with what's called the North Side South Side Challenge, and this is basically for high school students that run the south end of the course between about 7:30 and about 8. They run about a 3.5 mile race, and they basically get them off the race and just in time for the elite runners to come through. And the elite runners actually passed by the point where I am, which is mile 26, about 10 minutes ago. And I'm not too sure the person who was leading, but the red tank top man basically sprinted up the Roosevelt Avenue Bridge right on the corner of Roosevelt and Michigan as you head east towards Shedd Aquarium. And I have to say, his sprint was faster than my longest run ever was. So,
and I'm betting he was Kenyan.
Yeah, he was Kenyan. Hold on a second. There is a Caucasian now, Mike. There is a Caucasian runner. I think he's number 10, but hold on a second. I'm not too sure. Well, okay, I'm not too sure what country he's from. But anyway, I just can't believe someone could sprint up an incline after running for 26 miles. So
it's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm glad that my kitchen is on the same level as my bedroom when I go in to make coffee in the morning.
and you sent me something last night, which is very interesting. The high temperatures last year for October 8th, 9th, and 10th were 53, 52, and 48. This
48. Yeah, and keep going. I'm the one
this year it's 79, 86, and 86.
Yeah, I think we'll probably hit 86 again today, which eventually will tie the record. Yesterday, we actually tied the record back in 1947. And if we hit 86 today, actually we hit 87 today, it'll be the warmest official temperature ever in Chicago. Midway Airport hit 88 yesterday, but it was an unofficial. But that's the latest ever this time of the year that Chicago has seen a temperature that warm, which is, you know, you think about it. We talked about Washington, D.C. a couple weeks ago hitting 99. We talked about Denver, Colorado hitting 96. Those were all the warmest ever this late in the year. Now Chicago is pretty much in that same category. And it looks beautiful again tomorrow for Columbus Day Parade, which is going to be occurring on Columbus Drive sometime after about noon. Oh, a couple more runners coming this way. Sorry about all the cowbell interference, but it's kind of a, I think this should be a regular part of our show, don't you think? When you eventually go to me, you hit the right button, you hit the cowbell.
I need to have a cowbell sound effect, okay, Heather? We're going to get that in here. The question we all want to know is, when are we going to get some rain?
Oh, my God. It's been terrible, hasn't it? This has been one of the driest periods in about 10 years. If you take out the one day of rain that we had, which totaled about an inch and a half, we've basically had less than a quarter of an inch of rain now going on for about 45 to about 50 days. And the only thing that's really keeping the shrubs in order right now is the fact that we had so much rain early in the year. So a lot of the evaporation's been coming off the first inch or so. But to be honest with you, Mike, I don't see anything in the way of substantial rain in Chicago for another week. We are still in this drought. We're still in this warm pattern. And after the 86-degree high today, we'll probably cool off maybe into the upper 70s to near 80 tomorrow. Probably cooler, low to mid-70s to Tuesday and Wednesday, and probably getting right back in the mid to upper 70s by the end of the week. But I do see some cooler weather definitely coming in here by the end of the week, but nothing in the way of any rain. So warm and dry until further notice. Great weather to be viewing the marathon, but I really feel bad for anybody who's taken 4 to 4.5 hours to finish this, because by the noontime hour, my temperatures could easily be close to 80 degrees, which is that's too warm to be running a race.
Yeah,
55 miles.
It's your excuse for running fast. All right, let me hear your cowbell one more time. All right, Rick DeMaio with his cowbell on Michigan Avenue at the Chicago Marathon on 10-10-10. Always a pleasure, Rick. We'll talk to you next week, okay?
Okay, take care. Great show so far, Mike.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Looking for a housing investment that can pay big dividends? Remodel your kitchen or bathroom. You'll freshen up your home and add value to it, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for all your remodeling needs. Kitchens, bathrooms, master suites, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
It's fall planting time at Sid's Greenhouses and Garden Center, and this week you'll find savings on everything you need to get your home and garden ready for the season. In addition to savings of 40% off their entire stock of fall and Halloween decor, you'll also find the best selection of fall garden mums and hardy winter pansies. This week also save up to 75% on all remaining nursery stock, and perennials are buy one, get one free. This week I had Phil Schaffsma from Sid's sent me a Facebook message. And he said somebody walked into the store and said, "Hey, I'm here at Sid's because I heard about it on Mike Novak's great radio show." Where's my bell? I need to hit my I need a cowbell is what I need. So that's what I want to hear, folks. Go in and tell them you heard it on the show. Here's a helpful tip. When you bring in your houseplants from the patio next week, don't bring in any bugs or fungus. Pre-treat them with Fertilom Triple Action Plus. It's an organic insecticide, miticide, and fungicide all in one. Yes, before you bring in your plants from the outdoors, check them over. Sid, Chicagoland's premier garden centers are located in Palos Hills and Southwest Highway and in Bolingbrook on Napier Plainfield Road at Hassert Boulevard. Don't forget, when you're done planting, bring your plastic pots and cell packs to Sid's for recycling.
Chicago, Chicago, that toddling town.
It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. And I can go back to my panel and bring them back in and try not to hang up on them. I've got, you know, it's like running the space shuttle here. I don't know if you've ever been in this. Alderman Joe Moore has been. I keep calling you Joe, and I apologize for being disrespectful.
That's okay, Mike. We're on first name basis.
Oh, that's good. That is Alderman Joe Moore from the 49th Ward. We have Henry Henderson from the Natural Resources Defense Council also on the phone. Beth Botts from the Chicago Tribune and Growing in Chicago, her blog. And we have Christy Weber from Christy Weber Landscapes. Let's get back to a question I started with you way back about the horticultural industry and how it's benefited under Mayor Daley. You got started just about the same time he was getting into office, right? So your career's...
Well, I moved into Chicago in 1985, and I really just thought you threw your trash out the window. Mm-hmm. And I figured somebody must come around and pick it up. Bears win...
Yeah, they win every year, right? They were going to win the Super Bowl. If you move here in 85, you're thinking, they're going to win this every year. Yeah.
So I moved here from Denver, so, you know, it was like, I was shocking how dirty the city was. So, you know, I'm just cleaning up my act, trying to grow up, and I start this business, and I'm sitting on Ogden Avenue, and I saw, like, all this work going on. It was crazy in 1996, all these trees being planted, and whoom, this limo goes by with President Clinton in it. And it was sort of like we were cleaning up the city for the cousins to come to United Center. And that was pretty much the beginning. You know, I know the mayor had started to do a lot of tree planting. I wasn't involved in it right then, but that was when it really took off, was when President Clinton came to town. And I think also the mayor and you guys know Terry Teal, they all went over to Detroit. And they said, damn, we ain't going to let it be like that. And so they came back and fixed it up and said, we're not going to let it go by way of Detroit. And thank God.
And, you know, I'm from Detroit, so...
Well, I'm from Michigan, too.
Yeah, okay.
Well, I'm from Flint. Worse.
Well, that's even worse, yes.
worse. So, you know, I remember Terry Teal telling me that when he was working with the mayor's chief of staff, that CDOT would call him up. He was out on division, and they were pouring new concrete, and he's like, CDOT would call him up, those boys, and say, hey, Terry, listen to this. The boss says to cut a hole 4x4 in the concrete for a tree. And Terry's like, yeah, we're going to give it a shot. Well, we've been cutting them all down, the trees. Now they want us to plant more ones. And so, you know, I mean, that's the change. It wasn't just, you know, the mayor. It was changing departments and, you know, just every... I mean, even when I was building my building, to get different departments to understand what we were trying to do, was it was like moving, you know, a mountain. So to understand the different things that were green that we were going to do to our building that may not have met city code. And I know, Henry, you understand.
Yeah, I think your space over there, when this was an illegal landfill, and then we cleaned it up, and then how do you turn it into a green space? And one of the things was, how do you retain water on the site?
Right.
And Department of Sewers was like, no, you can't do that. You got to get off there real fast.
That's exactly right.
You got to get off there fast. You don't want that water on that site, you know? And they explained the fact that, you know, you've got problems with your sewers already. This is a resource, not a waste problem. And it's, you know, it's like it takes such steady work. And I think one of the things about what really helped move the project of greening forward was as a result of our litigation with Commonwealth Edison, which in our view had failed to do its duty under the franchise agreement, and we sued them, and we got a settlement of that for $100 million, which, rather than just going to general revenues, went into greening the city, because greening the city actually is an energy project, because it cools the city in the summer and helps it stay warmer in the winter without the use of energy. And I think that that's part of what, you know, these sea changes have occurred.
Yeah,
how do
you know,
we,
I
how
was
we
gonna
connect
say,
that and make it continue?
You know, I Henry, that was the thing that struck me when the two of you were talking just now, is 15 years ago, it was all about getting the water into the sewer.
Right.
I mean, that's such a short time, and I'm sure that a lot of people just can't wrap their heads around that.
Right, it remains a problem, and it's one of the things around the Chicago River deal, where the Water Reclamation District believes that rainwater is a waste disposal problem that gives them the opportunity to get a lot more tax dollars to spend with their engineering friends, as opposed to this is a major resource that, you know, your previous thing with the weather about how dry it is here.
Yeah.
We need to keep that stuff in the ground. It's part of cultivating our community.
And this is Joe Moore again. I totally agree. And again, one of the enviable and admirable parts of the mayor's record. So he's done some good on water, but I notice the time is running short. I wanted to mention one other major shortcoming, and that is in the air quality side.
Absolutely.
Of things. There are two coal-fired plants. One is, Mike, your radio studio is right in the shadow of one of
the
Crawford plants.
Hey, listen, Joe, I drive past both of them on the way to work every Sunday, so I'm reminded of this every week.
And the fact that they're still operating, and that the mayor thus far has not supported our ordinance to clean those power plants up is another major blot on his record. And I'm hoping now that he's not planning on running for re-election and freed, you know, from needing to kowtow to the corporate interests, that he'll join in on this ordinance because it is, you know, he's got a climate action plan that calls for cleaning up of those two coal-fired power plants, and we're giving him the tools to do that. And I think that is something that is absolutely essential. I know you're going to have a guest, Kim, on the next hour.
Right, you know, we're definitely going to get into that with the Kim Wasserman Nieto from Little Village Environmental Justice Organization. Yes, Beth?
But, you know, one of the things that you gotta recognize is that we have a Chicago Climate Action Plan.
Yeah.
We have a Chicago Trees Initiative. We have all of these clear statements of, you know, Chicago having an intention to take action, long-term, broad-based action to deal with climate change. And, you know, but the question is whether that will end up being implemented, whether we will keep making progress toward making the city less of a contributor to climate change and adapting to the climate change that's already inevitable.
You mean with a new mayor?
Even with
a
new mayor.
Okay, the question I would ask as we wrap up this hour is, will the Department of the Environment even survive under a new mayor? I think it would be a shame if it did not. Joe, if you would weigh in, and then Henry, I'd be interested in your take on this.
I agree, Mike, and unfortunately, it's the department is slowly shrinking in size,
yeah.
Maybe not so slowly, due to budget constraints, and so it's going to be very incumbent upon those of us who care about the environment and agree with Henry at the beginning of the hour when he said that the Department of Environment was an essential part of governing the city. that we protect that, because there's going to be a lot of pressures, I think, to eliminate the department as the financial crunch really hits the city.
Henry?
Yeah, it's a really frightening thing, and I think what it underscores, and I appreciate Joe's comments at the beginning about the importance of action within the city. I think what we need to do in a post-Daily world is look at the fact that citizens are agents of their own fate. It's also what we're looking at in terms of the two facilities that Joe referred to in the sponsoring legislation to help bring to an end the Fisk and Crawford plants. Citizen action, independent of government, is critical to the American way of life, where we are involved in our fates and we don't simply rely on government to deliver the goods for us. We've got to get active on this stuff.
I want to thank you, Henry Henderson with the NRDC, for being here. And he was the original commissioner of the Department of the Environment for the City of Chicago. Thanks so much for joining us in this discussion. And Alderman Joe Moore from the 49th Ward, both of you guys, I really do appreciate that. And I hope we all talk soon.
It's been great.
Look forward to
really
it. Thank you very much. Good discussion.
Thank you.
Bye, you guys.
And Christy Weber, can I ask you a favor? Can you stick around for just a few? I know you got to get out of here around 10, but we never did get to that horticultural question, which I just want to resolve before you leave the building, if that's all right.
All right,
you'll be back. Beth Botts is here. In the second hour, we're going to have Mick Dumke and Irma Tranter from Friends of the Parks and Kim Wasserman Nieto from the Little Village Environmental Justice Organization. We had a question come in Twitter about jobs, green jobs, and we should probably talk about that a little bit. And you're welcome with your phone call, 773-838-9278, to discuss Mayor Richard M. Daley's green legacy in Chicago. More when we return.
So your brother's bound and gagged, and they've chained him to a chair. Won't you please come to Chicago just to sing?
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees, and by Sid's Greenhouses, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, and by WRD Environmental, creating sustainable landscapes for today and tomorrow. Here he is again, Mike Novak.
That may be the perfect song for this show, actually, Heather Fry. So thank you so much for suggesting that. Welcome back to the second hour of our discussion about Mayor Richard M. Daley's green legacy in the city of Chicago. We have new guests here in studio, some who were here last hour. I did ask Christy Weber to stick around for just a few more minutes. Irma Tranter, who's the president of Friends of the Parks, is here, and Mick Dumke is on the line. He is on the line. Yes, he's on line. We'll get to him in just a second. I wanted to get to... This is something that Beth Botts, who's also in studio now, said to me right after Daley announced that he was leaving office. And she said, the horticultural community is quaking in its boots.
Absolutely.
You agree, Christy?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Tell me
well,
more.
The whole Midwest, you know, every business, if you couldn't make money in the last 10 years, you're an idiot. If you were in the horticulture business. I'm not kidding you.
So what does that
Midwest,
make me, huh?
It's, you know, I can't tell you how I grew in 10 years from a $600,000 company to a $20 million company in 10 years. And, you know, and
you're
it's
obviously
not, just,
not an idiot.
It's not just the fact of public work. It's also private work. I mean,
but again, the public work, what people see in the parks and what they see in Millennium Park, what they see in those median planters.
Well, they were doing it on my block in the ghetto.
I drove down Madison Street and there are median planters on Madison Street. That raises the expectation for people on what they're going to have in their own home landscapes, in their own parks. And
it's going to be, I don't know who it'll be, but it's going to be a different world. I just hope they maintain everything because, you know, government's good at building and not so good at maintaining. I'm hoping that they still continue to maintain what they've built, like Millennium Park, like the airports. I'm just mentioning the contracts that I hold.
Well, but you know, all right, here's a question I would pose to you. How do you go back on that? If when now people fly into the city and they get out, even at the airports, they look around and they say, wow, this is beautiful. What a nice welcome to the city. I love going to Midway and the way that that got all changed and Midway was rebuilt and now it's actually a very pleasant place to fly
bigger.
Out of town.
It's bigger than
I enjoy
O'Hare.
Going to Midway better than I do O'Hare, much more. Yeah,
well,
Irma?
I'm optimistic. I think that the city looks beautiful and that we have a higher expectation the way. I don't think that citizens and our citizens' action would want to see the city not beautiful. And remember, beauty begets economic development. I think it's a key thing to tourism and to the bottom line of the economy of the city. So I'm optimistic that any new mayor will continue and hopefully build on this.
I agree.
And the other thing is, you know, you talk about green jobs. You know, I think that all the jobs that have been created in the horticulture industry, the landscape architects and the installation and the maintenance firms and the tree planting firms, and with all the greater attention that's been given to the maintenance level of the parks and the maintenance level of the city landscape, a lot of that was done by private firms. And so that created a lot of jobs. It created a lot of green jobs. Now, you talk about other green jobs in the city. I'm not sure how many, you know, other jobs we've seen, but we've certainly seen a whole lot of green jobs created just through the horticulture and kind of green architecture and green roofs.
I know, but a lot of city workers are really upset, and I don't blame them.
About?
They're taking, 26 furlough days, and I'm out, you know, planting flowers. So, I mean, we have to find a balance, and we have to somehow
educate. Yeah, but you're a private company.
And they don't like that either. Believe
me. That you're doing city jobs and you're a private contractor?
That I've taken away city jobs by, you know, doing this, that, you know, I got a letter from somebody that used to work for the Park District, very upset, saying that he used to be able to provide for his family until I started taking the work away from him as a private company.
And why was that job taken away? What are the economics behind it?
Well, generally, it's the old typical thing that, you know, private, you know, industry will do it better and smarter and faster. Sadly, because of so much, you know, of this corruption talk, a lot of the city workers and a lot of the population of Chicago will say, yeah, but it's corrupt and it costs us more. So, but as I've always said, if as many people watched and counted and audited and babysat each city worker as much they do my company, we would totally be in great shape as the city of Chicago, because I can't be corrupt. I cannot go out and cheat the city, or there's no way. I have so many people watching everything I do.
So in a sense, you've earned what you get.
And then some,
because you do the job right. You know, so if you want city jobs to stay, they have to be as competent as the private sector, the people who do the jobs, and the management has
but
to be as competent as the private sector.
It's so different. Like, my brother was he used to work for this this corporation that was taken over by General Motors, and all of a sudden they became union, and the FedEx guy shows up, and my brother's in the forklift, and the guy's like, well, come on and get the stuff off, Bob. And Bob's like, well, I can't unload that. That's another guy's job. Mm-hmm. And the guy's like, well, that used to be your job. Come on, I got to go. I got another run. Mm-hmm. And that's the problem. You know, when you see what's going on and why people privatize, is it's just not my job.
Can I go into the Park District
and
the privatization? Talking about the gentleman who wrote to you and
then,
lost
by the way,
job.
this is Irma Tranter, who's the president of Friends of the Parks. And we have a couple of people on hold. Who was the gentleman from Ukrainian Village, Steve? We're going to get to you in a second, Steve. Mick Dumke is online, probably champing at the bit as well. Go ahead, Irma.
The Park District started to privatize 15 or so years ago, maybe.
Right.
And I think that they had, it was essential because I think that it was quite clear that audit studies, McKinsey went out and did some studies when Forrest Claypool took over, that our workers, you know, weren't held accountable for the work that they did. And, you know, you have the, unfortunately, it's, you had many complaints about standing around and not getting work done, or driving from the north side to the south side and getting two things done in one day, maybe, or going to a park to fix a heater and then saying, geez, we don't have the bolt that we need, and then not coming back for 4 weeks or not coming back at all.
Yeah.
And there was just no accountability. Things were not getting done as a result. Certain things were privatized. And actually, there are absolutely some great things that should have been privatized. I mean, we weren't in the golf. Park districts aren't good at golf. So finally, they privatized. Mm-hmm. And actually, they have a fairly good operator right now.
I just saw a story about the Jackson Park and how that's changed. Mm-hmm. And again, as Christy pointed out, the old timers, some of the old timers are upset, but a lot of the people who come now say, wow, this is really nice. Mm-hmm. And I played Jackson Park 20 years ago when you could practically just walk on it and nobody was paying attention. Yeah. And, you know, it was a lot of fun for a kid who had no money, but, you know.
And it was also, you know, neglected.
Yes.
And ignored and full of broken glass. I think one of the real stories of the Daley administration is he basically took over the Park District, which is kind of theoretically a separate unit of government, and which up till that point had been more or less a separate political fiefdom. And he, as he's done in so many other respects, just basically went in there and took it over. And there have been huge, huge changes in the parks and in the park district, in how they look, in how they're, how usable they are, in the maintenance, in the new parks that have opened, the imagination to open a new park in a quarry in Bridgeport. You know, I think that is really going to stand as one of the great accomplishments of the Daley administration.
Hey, you know what? I want to address something, and we just got tweeted. ProScience writes, "Thanks for cutting off that discussion before it got too anti-union." Ugh.
Mm-hmm. No, I don't know union. That we're being. I'm a union chap. Mm-hmm. We're union. All
You're
the way.
Union.
Absolutely.
Okay, there you go, buddy.
So we're
You know, it's a different kind of union.
Yeah,
you know?
We have a maintenance union that's run by the laborers, and we have a construction union that's run by.
It's
the
not
laborers.
A municipal union, but it, I'm glad to hear
it
you say that.
It doesn't matter. I still have to make money.
Well, I understand that. You
it's
know,
not and, a big and, governmental. You know, I mean.
So I don't want you to think we're union bashing here. This is
absolutely not. I'm from UAW town. Believe me.
I've belonged to five different unions in my life. I belong to two right now. Okay, so like Dick Kay, I'm AFTRA. I'm also SAG. I've belonged. I was a card carrying member of the UAW. In Detroit, Local 51, putting satellite Sebrings together at the Lynch Road plant. So this is how I got through college.
You have another Detroiter here, I heard.
Yeah, all right. Well, quickly, give me those lines there, Heather. Let's go to, first of all, I'm going to say hi to Mick Dumke. I bet this is all pretty interesting to you, isn't it?
Of course. Yeah. Nothing to say, of course. That's what you guys are talking about.
Listen, I wanted to say hi, and I'm going to bring in Steve, and then you're going to have your turn. So let's
go. No sweat.
Let's go to Steve from Ukrainian Village on line two. Thank you for holding, Steve.
Well, you're welcome, and good morning to all of you.
Good morning.
Hi. Good morning.
I want to just make two points, and one, I was also concerned about the idea of throwing working people under the bus a little bit, but my line on that would be this. Mr. Daley, when problems occurred, often did not take accountability for those problems. And I believe that there was a culture of corruption at City Hall, and there was a corruption of there was a culture of him not taking accountability. So on the one hand, you're saying, you know, he took accountability on some parks, but on the corruption, he didn't. And I feel that there was a inconsistent culture of not taking accountability. So I think throwing the working people, you know, criticizing them a little bit, you have to start at the top.
Well, you're absolutely mm-hmm. right about that. You're getting a lot of nodding heads here mm-hmm. in the studio because with a city the size of Chicago, there's a lot of different issues. And while some of these, some things may have been done right, there were a lot of things that were done mm-hmm. wrong, and there was corruption. I mean, there's just no way to get around it. Beth and I talked the other day about this. Unfortunately, it's part of the culture of just being in Chicago. Is playing into that.
My point is that you can't blame the working person if the man at the top is often not taking accountability. But the second point I want to make, Alderman Wagaspak this week sort of got into a comment with the mayor about contracts. And so, you know, we should have more contractual oversight. And with all due respect to the success that Ms. Weber's company has, I actually this winter saw the company cleaning off the parking meter boxes, cleaning off the snow. So I wonder, you know, some of the contracts that have been let over the mayor's history have not been really publicly vetted, and I think we need more of a competitive bidding. I don't know what landscaping has to do with snow removal, but we certainly, the parking meter deal is horrendous.
That's a private contract through Laz Parking, mm-hmm. and that was to remove the snow off the top of the meters if there was enough of it for... solar run.
Oh.
So if there was a bunch of snow on it. Right, and then we would go out and just make sure that the buttons worked, basically. Real small, run down the street, make sure they do. But it was through Laz, not through the city.
Right, I understand. It's just the $1.5 billion contract was completed overnight.
Yeah. And
we're not going to argue, Steve.
Steve,
we agree.
Yeah,
we're not going to argue that. I think that's one of the worst contracts that we've encountered.
You know, here's the legacy of that contract, Steve. Unfortunately, there might be some privatization that might be good for the city, but mm-hmm. right now nobody's mm-hmm. touching that stuff with a 10-foot pole because that was such a horrible bargain, and it was a fiasco, and everybody knows it. And I think it's one of the things, frankly, and this is just a personal opinion, that has led Mayor Daley not to run again. Somebody said he's not having fun anymore, and I think one of the reasons he's not having fun is he got beat up so badly over that privatization issue.
But again, you know, it's like the blue bag program teaching people to be cynical about recycling. When you screw up one privatization contract uh-huh. so badly, it teaches the whole city to be cynical and distrustful about using any private contractors for anything.
So should I not do that, since I don't agree? You know, it was a bad deal, so should I not take on that work? Should I not employ more people during the winter? Because I don't have enough snow removal, and mm-hmm. I employ 180 guys. Mm-hmm. So should I not take on winter work?
But let's go back to Steve's comment city workers and the worker.
Well,
there's an option. I just want to say that there always could be an option, and the Park District and city can consider that. Phoenix and some other smaller towns are doing that, where they have an actual competitive bid between the worker that would work for the Park District and a contractor, and that group, whether it be gardeners, you know, compete and show that their productivity and their skills enhance or at a lower cost. And we had always hoped that we would have had those comparisons. However, you never had that opportunity. It was either or. And so they cut the gardeners and went to private, where you can do a mix of both if the city or park district employee, is an outstanding and productive entity.
And one more thing before I let you go. You were mentioning, Steve, that what I saw online, what Heather typed up, was something about alleys, and you haven't even mentioned it.
Yeah, I would like to just make that comment and go. I believe that when you look at the greenness of Chicago, look at our alleys first. Look at how the regular person lives their life during the day. And here in Ukrainian Village, we do not have recycling. I cannot believe that we do not have recycling.
I don't have it either, Steve.
So,
I don't have Blue Cart.
Yeah, the bottom line is, for me, when we talk about the mayor's legacy, we have to talk about service to the people first. Mm-hmm. Not the tourists first, the people
That's
first.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And to me, it's deplorable that we don't have recycling, whereas we have other, you know, city contracts that were massive and let. And I just hope that, we need recycling and mm-hmm. we need it immediately. So I appreciate Mike and all the Chicago Recycling, all you're doing there.
Well, Steve, I appreciate your comment. Excellent comments. Thank you so much for being part of the show today.
Great. Have a good one.
You too. Bye-bye. All right. With that, Let me bring in Mick Dumke, who is a staff writer for the Chicago News Cooperative, has been at Chicago Reader and Chicago Reporter, has been on my show many times. And as I write on my website this week, he became my hero when Mayor Daley threatened to shove a rifle up his keister. And
I thought I was your hero before that, Mike.
Actually, you were, but you became even more of my hero when the mayor said that. How are you today?
I'm all right. Good discussion you guys have going here.
Thank you. Well, give us a little perspective, since you've been kind of on the outside looking in this morning. What are we getting right and what are we missing here?
Well, I'll just jump in about a couple things you guys have been talking about in the last few minutes. In the Park District, I think everybody else has pointed out, yeah, there have been some great improvements. A lot of the parks look really great. There have been some expansions. I think, Irma, you mentioned Stearns Quarry over in Bridgeport, Chinatown, which is a fantastic place, one of my favorite spots in the city now. And so definitely some high points in the mayor's tenure in the Park District front. But I also have to say, I mean, I'm a regular user. I try to swim at some Park District pools. The service is horrible. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just, we're paying more in fees than we used to. I mean, there used to be some of these things were free. Now we're paying fees. And, you know, you still can show up on a given day. Something's not open when it's supposed to be. Somebody may be there, may not be there. It's still not run well, quite honestly. I mean, at many of the parks at the local level, still not run very well. And, you know, it's a big system, so, you know, obviously, there are going to be some fits and starts here and there, but, you know, it really extends from the top. And, you know, the mayor, as you mentioned, has essentially been running the Park District as he's been running virtually every level of local government, the school system, the CTA, and so forth. And so, you know, lots of people are involved in the management of these systems, but ultimately it does come back to one guy, and that's the mayor. And, you know, I think there's still a culture at the Park District of, you know, service being very inconsistent. And there is still sort of a mentality of, you know, trying to maintain the status quo with as much as you can without actually thinking about delivering quality service to citizens and to taxpayers, you know.
Mick, Irma's going to comment here, but I want to say one thing, and you make a really important point, which is that Mayor Daley went out of his way to consolidate his power, and that is he has appointed how many aldermen who are there now and has, in effect, pretty much bullied the city council for most of the time he's been in office, which means that if you run all parts of the government, which apparently he has, then you're responsible for getting things done. If you don't get things done and you have all the power, you're responsible, and I think that's a really important point that you make.
Yeah, and just a couple other quick things, and then I'm happy to engage with everyone else. The privatization discussion, I mean, you know, quick reminder to everybody, privatization can mean a lot of different things, from leasing an asset like the parking meters, which, of course, no one wants to defend at this point, to using private contractors to perform various functions within the agency. And so, you know, it's a very broad term. It can be good or bad. But I think that the relevant point, or the point I'd like to make, is that, you know, really outsourcing responsibilities and contracting is only as good as the oversight provided. And so, you know, you may have a company like Ms. Weber's, which does excellent work, but you may have another company that doesn't. And you know, it really only is up, it's still up to the management of, for instance, the Park District system to oversee, you know, that contract, making sure that it's being met, you know, that the terms of the contract are being met and that the service delivery is still there the same way it was. And then the last point I'd make is, you guys are talking a little bit about the parking meter deal. Well, before that, if you remember, there was the downtown parking garages privatization deal, in which the city basically turned over to the same people who now run the street parking system. They turned over the downtown Millennium Park parking garages for $563 million in, I believe it was 2008. And that money was supposed to go primarily into neighborhood parks, and it didn't. The vast majority of the money went to
basic overhead for the administration of the park district system. And I want to, I believe my colleague, my former colleague at the Reader, Ben Jarofsky, had reported that only like $100 million of that $563 million, you know, was supposedly left over for neighborhood parks. So, you know, there's another example, if we needed one, of a privatization idea that, that just definitely didn't live up to the original billing.
Irma?
Mick, hi. I agree with you on the reduction of services at local parks. We were just started off talking about the exterior, and the parks
yeah.
do look better and they are maintained. And I think you're right that there was a shift in the last 10 years, certainly, of making the parks look good on the outside. And
sure.
that's all right, because 80% of the people use the parks outdoors and only 20% use them indoors. We want to increase that because our parks are the place where kids can recreate. They're tied in with health and fitness, and we want great programming. And we agree that there has been a tremendous reduction in the number of staff people at the park level. At the same time, there has not been a level of training that is essential to provide good services. And you can get nothing frustrates me more than to walk into a park and these, you know, somebody's standing at a desk and they don't even look up and say hello. And
right.
this is in the 21st century, and we've had 20 years of just talking about this. I mean, and there's just not the, you know, training of staff. But furthermore, the higher fees we've objected to for years, because parks should be the place where kids go, and they're now charging for children. We've got to figure out a way to make this work. Kids have got to have recreation. They've got to be off the streets, and the parks are the only place where there are parks in their neighborhoods to do that. And I just want to add a couple of things. Looking at other cities, and we have one, you know, we talk about a very strong mayor here controlling the park district, and I think we need to get away from that and to get into good management. There is a national agency that accredits park districts and park departments in the United States of America. And there are, you know, levels of management that people follow. We're not even on the same page as that.
Hmm.
So I'd
yeah.
like to see us going to really professional management systems in place. And furthermore, the National Parks and Recreation Association on the national level gives out a gold medal award to major cities, small cities. Illinois does a fantastic job on the smaller cities. Chicago Park District isn't even considered because it does not have the management. It doesn't have a master plan. So I think we need to get more into professional management of a park department as we do in other park districts in the state of Illinois.
Like a business, just a business.
Milwaukee, Milwaukee parks have the gold medal for 2009. And guess what? New York City is one of the four finalists in a park getting the gold medal for management for 2010. And I remember 10 years ago going to New York, and they started to talk about it because they had a corrupt system and a mismanaged system, and they started to say, we want to revamp our system to a point where we're going to be recognized as the best managed system in the United States. And they're one of four being considered this year. So we can do it.
As Christy said earlier, there's a big difference between building something and maintaining it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a big difference between sort of the physical presence of the parks and the physical shape of the parks, and the actual day-to-day management and maintenance of the parks. And then there, you know, things like Mick talked about the higher fees, the fees for parking. If people can't get to the parks, they can't use them. We've imposed fees for parking at the parks. We haven't improved public transit to the point where it is a more viable option for people to get to the parks, a more viable option for them to avoid driving downtown and having to pay for downtown
parking.
That's
a really important point of the whole. We haven't even gotten to the mass transportation issue. And something you said to me the other day, Beth, is actually kind of interesting. And Mick, you might find this interesting, that the whole parking fiasco, as everybody likes to call it, in some weird, twisted way, makes people less likely to drive in the city. And that might be a good thing.
But yeah. only if you have the alternative of public transportation.
Right, right.
Well, right. And I think I've talked with you, Mike, before, and others have said this. You know, ideally, if your goal was to actually build up a mass transit system, discourage driving, it wouldn't have been a bad idea to jack up the rates of at the meters, but the money should have gone back into,
yes,
you know, alternatives. Mm-hmm. And obviously it didn't.
So the deal was bad, but in the really, when you look at it, it's managed better. So it was a bad deal for us taxpayers, but it's managed better. I mean, is compliance good or bad?
Basically, how do we know it's managed better?
Well,
I mean,
because
what do you mean by managed better?
Because people are
money's managed well because it's all going back to the pockets of private contractors.
But
I don't know if that makes a difference to me as a citizen.
The deal was bad, but the parking, we can all park now.
All right, I'm going to corral everybody right now because I got to take a break. Mick Dumke is the guy on the phone. And by the way, Mick, it would be nice to have another male presence in the room here. I'm surrounded.
you're loving it, Mike.
These high-powered women, and I include Heather there, who keeps grabbing my shoulder and saying, hey, we got to talk about some of the things on Twitter. Like Sue Markgraf wrote in and said, Chicago's green community needs to own and drive the campaign issues on sustainability. That's going to be down the road on this show. I'm going to talk about the candidates. You know, what are their green beliefs? She writes, what do we want for a greener Chicago? Who do we endorse? We have the voice to move these issues in a forward-moving direction. So, you know, yeah, that's next. First, we're looking back, and then we got to look forward.
But I think that's a whole different show, Mike.
Oh, it is.
I think
after
the candidates sort of shake out and we know who's really running.
That's Beth Botts, who's written for the Chicago Tribune for 20 years. Irma Tranter is the president of the Friends of the Parks. She's here. Christy Weber, I knew you weren't going to leave. She's here. And Mick Dumke from the Chicago News Cooperative is on the phone. Hang on, Mick. We'll get back to you in a second and everybody else in the studio. As we get a winter, your outdoor plants, including evergreens and dormant trees and shrubs, become more vulnerable than ever. Cold weather, blustery winds, and frozen soils reduce the plant's ability to absorb moisture needed to maintain vitality. And, of course, there are the critters, which are foraging for whatever food they can find. That's why you need Bobex. It prevents moisture loss while making your plants unpalatable to deer, rabbits, voles, and more. And because the weather is cold, you don't have to spray very often. In spring and summer, you might be applying Bobex every week or every other week. In the fall and winter, you spray every 4 to 8 weeks, depending on the severity of the problem. Bobex is a family-owned company, and they care about the environment, which is why they use a non-toxic formula that repels critters by both odor and taste, using ingredients like putrescent eggs, always my favorite, and garlic, which gives your plants and bulbs the chance to survive the winter. Bobex is available only at local independent garden centers like Effinger Garden Center in Belleville, Illinois, Red's Garden Center in Northbrook, Illinois, Ralph's Greenhouse in Round Lake, Illinois. Remember, plants thrive and survive with Bobex.
Hey, gardeners. Want to be inspired? Make plans to visit Cantini Gardens in Wheaton, the 500-acre former estate of Robert R. McCormick. Cantini isn't just beautiful, it's a horticultural masterpiece. Stroll through the spectacular formal gardens created by renowned landscape architect Franz Lipp and marvel at the sheer variety of annuals, perennials, ground covers, trees, and shrubs. You'll love Cantini's Idea Garden, Rose Garden, and Native Prairie, too. Cantini has something for everyone, including museums, picnic area, gift shop, and restaurants. Plan your visit today at cantini.org.
So it's Sunday, a day for relaxation or maybe an adventure. And we have an adventure for you. Grab the family and head out to Lurvy Landscape and Garden Center in Des Plaines and build a mean scarecrow. Well, not that kind of mean. You know what I mean. Anyway, just bring your clothes for the scarecrow. Not your clothes. You bring clothes for the scarecrow. I suppose you could go out there and take off your clothes and put it on the scarecrow and they would toss you out. But you
want the scarecrow to be mean to the birds? Isn't that the whole point of a scarecrow?
Yeah, but, you know, kids don't want to really get scared. They just want to be kind of mildly scared by a scarecrow.
It's not going to dance and sing If I Only Had a Brain? I would not be such a nothing. My head all full of stuffing.
It's his union sack.
I better stop there because I'm going to have to pay the rights for the song, too. All right, anyway. And the whole thing is just a buck if you do that at Lurvy's. And take advantage of the last day of Pink Week in honor of Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Wear something pink in the store and get 10% off your total purchase. Lurvy's has Invincible Spirit, a hot pink winter durable breed of hydrangea. And if you buy one for your home or garden, Lurvy's will donate $3 to the Breast Cancer Foundation. Head to Scarecrow Fest today at Lurvy's from 10 to 4 p.m., 2550 East Dempster. It's right off of 294, just east of 294. There'll be a petting zoo, bouncy houses, pony rides, and the all-new train rides. For more information, go to lurveys.com, L-U-R-V-E-Y-S.com. Be a gardener for life by shopping at Lurvy Landscape Supply and Garden Center. And Lurvy's, of course, is a proud sponsor of the Breast Cancer Research Foundation. And we need a tip from the Care of Trees. This is a good time of year to be nice to your trees. After all, they've been nice to you, providing shade, cooling, and beauty. Look in the mirror. Have you done as much this year? I thought not. Anyway, if you want to be nice, mulch your trees right now. It's easy, inexpensive, and doesn't require special tools. Mulch suppresses weeds and keeps equipment like lawnmowers and string trimmers away from the tree and thus reduces trunk injuries that can be an opening for diseases and insects. Mulching moderates soil temperature, conserves soil moisture, and increases organic activity around the roots. In the tree world, mulch is God. Do not mess with God. By the way, don't make the mulch too thick. What do you, you know, I hear different stories. You know, some people are saying like 6 to 8 inches. I go, no, that's crazy. About crazy. Three inches about right, isn't it? What do you think?
Yeah.
Oh, what do you like, three, two?
Like 2 or 3 inches.
Yeah.
You know, I guess I just don't understand how everything in the city of Chicago in the parks lived. Without mulch.
That's true.
You know, I mean, and how in the heck, why do we have to have so many exotic soils now? Just to plant the park.
Hey, watch it. Our volunteers are mulching those trees.
Even as we speak. All right.
I mean, it's like mulch ring galore out in Humboldt Park right now.
And invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look at your tree. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. Christy Weber, never shy. The Care of Trees. Their businesses, people, and their love for trees.
Now this could only happen to a guy like me. And only happen.
Oh, I didn't have this cued right. I don't have time to get to the part where he sings My Kind. See, that's the problem. If you're doing it from the top of the song, I don't need this intro. I just need him singing My Kind of Town. Sorry, Frank, you're done. All right. It's the Mike Novak Show. We're talking about the legacy of Mayor Daley. There's green legacy, because there's lots of other stuff we could talk about. But we only have time for that. And the reason we're doing it on this show is because nobody else is doing it. So I took it upon myself. Mick Dumke is on the phone line. And in studio, I have Beth Botts, Irma Tranter, and Christy Weber. Where did we leave off? I'm like, what have we missed here today? I mean, Beth, you and I made a list of things we need. Mick, is there something we've missed here? Do you want to talk real quick about we did talk mass transportation.
I have one thing. I do want to say there are a couple things that the mayor, one I want to mention that the mayor has been doing a lot with bikes. I think that's been an important transition, and a lot has been accomplished in bike lanes and some revamping some trails. A lot needs to be done. I'm a biker, and I bike to work every day. It's not an easy city, given as big as we are.
Not.
But it still has been, a lot has been accomplished. On the negative side, though, let us not forget, Lisa, it was certainly an issue, a major issue with us, is Soldier Field, I think, was one of the second major mistakes of the Daley administration to turn that over to a private, in this case, a private company having control of public land for only private use.
And building
and
something.
We forget that one.
And building something really hideous. Mm-hmm. That's one of my big beefs. And, you know, Soldier Field...
Especially in a city that prides itself on its architecture.
In a city that prides itself on its architecture, we have this just toilet bowl in a Roman ruin thing sitting on our lakefront. And, you know, Soldier Field and Migs Field are something that I want to talk about because they're both sort of examples of how Daley has so consolidated his power that he makes all the decisions.
Yep.
It's just the mayor wants it, it happens.
Except for recycling. Well, I guess he didn't want it.
Except for recycling.
Right.
I guess he didn't want it.
Exactly.
But, you know, Migs Field, he just got tired of arguing about it. And, you know, even I strongly believe that Northerly Island always should have been parkland. But even I was shocked when, you know, the bulldozers in the night just went and gouged out the runways on Migs Field.
And I'm like a crazy park, you know, woman. And, of course, we always wanted Northern Island, but I was just speechless.
We were all appalled at that.
When that process occurred.
And you know what, that's the weird thing is that probably most of us in the room say that we all wanted, like you said, we all wanted it to happen, but the way it happened.
Unbelievable. You know, there's the end and then there's the means. Mm-hmm. And the means in Chicago for the last 20 years has been the mayor decides he wants it and everybody says to everybody else, the mayor wants this to happen and it happens. Or, and so the mayor just sort of all of a sudden decides he's going to cave into the McCaskies and the next thing we know, we have this hideous Soldier Field on our lakefront. It's all been on the mayor. He has made stuff happen. Or if it didn't happen, it's because he didn't make it happen. And
so everybody
and
said that
the
about
bad
Millennium
stuff
Park.
That happens, yeah. He has to wear the jacket for that too.
Well, yeah, but everybody said that about a Millennium Park.
Well, Millennium
and now look at now. No, everybody cannot. But
Millennium
they didn't
Park.
Say that.
Well, but they didn't
say that.
That's true.
Mick get a word in here.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have to say on all these instances. Sure, the end can be great. I mean, Northerly Island, Millennium Park, agree with you guys. Those are good developments. But, you know, we as citizens, we undermine our ability to get our voice in by saying, oh, well, you know, but Millennium Park is great. Oh, well, but, you know, Northerly Island is great. I mean, there's a degree of political corruption here. I mean, we can talk about contracting and the bad parking meter deal, all this kind of thing. But really, this mayor, one of his leading legacies is political corruption. He has shown absolutely no respect for the democratic process. Anyone who speaks out against him, he has tried to intimidate. He's had them, you know, destroyed politically at election time by dispensing some of his armies. And, you know, we as citizens, along with the members of the city council, our representatives, have gone along with this by saying, well, he does most of it right. He gets most of it right in the end.
Yeah,
the problem
Nick,
is that the stuff he doesn't get right, we don't have any say in because he just goes ahead and does it anyway.
Mick, on that one, I just want to go back and remind people that Soldier Field is different in that from the Millennium Park example. And it's just because Millennium Park, everybody uses it and benefits by it and rejoices in it. It's the most really a great place to be to watch children and families interact. But go back to Soldier Field. The problem with that one is not desecration of the lakefront by its looks, but the fact that we don't have a quarter-mile track there that anybody could go use or a soccer field that high schools could use. There was that opportunity to do that. And not only that, but taxpayers are paying right now to subsidize the Bears on the debt servicing of Soldier Field.
Yeah,
and
it's an outrageous deal, absolutely.
With Millennium, you have to give the John Bryan a lot of credit for raising a lot of private dollars. Now, could it have been done cheaper? Maybe, probably, but, you know, beyond that, there's a difference between taxpayers really bearing the burden for another 30 years or something in the debt servicing on Soldier Field that we pay every time you buy a coffee in a region of the downtown or stay at a hotel.
We are paying, by the way, for Millennium Park as well. I mean, I know a lot of that was private funding, but we paid tens of millions of dollars to settle contracting lawsuits. That was in over budget. And, yeah, we all love the park. It's great. But I think, you know, the question we can continue to raise is, could it have been done better? Could it, in the future, when we have these kinds of projects,
is there a participatory process that could be put into place that would, you know, make the, not just the end result, but the way things are done, improve on them? And I think absolutely, I think that's absolutely true.
The other thing you need, though, the thing that Daley has in to his credit provided, is he has provided the vision to make these things happen. And yes, he has autocratically imposed that vision, but he had the vision, and there wasn't anybody before who had that kind of vision.
I think there's a lot of people, I think, in Chicago who just want somebody to take charge.
Just want somebody to do it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, just get it done.
Leaders are leaders, and nobody's going to agree with them all the time.
Mm-hmm. Right. But and Mick's point,
I don't remember the last time that Daley sent out his henchmen to, you know, make sure to fix some aldermanic race. And, you know,
oh, come on. It happened 4 years ago in the last aldermanic election.
Yeah,
I mean,
and where? What ward? I don't know.
It happened in the number of wards. He had people like fundraisers like Elsie Higginbottom, a Southside real estate man and businessman. He had the Chicagoland Chamber of Commerce. They don't have the same armies they have because of federal court decrees, which the Daley administration has resisted vehemently.
But do you think that's more of their doing?
They spent money propping up members of the city council they thought would be loyal to them. They spent millions of dollars, absolutely.
To them privately. But maybe not, you know, to them privately.
Sure. The mayor didn't have his hands in any of that. You're going to tell me, Mayor Daley.
One of the ways that Daley has consolidated his power is by sort of moving patronage from just sort of give some guy a job in Streets and Sand to, you know, making very wealthy corporations happy, both by letting contracts. And, you know,
so it's kind of a shifting of patronage.
It's been a sort of a shifting.
Pinstripe patronage.
Bond sales.
Kinds of ways that business has benefited from the Daley administration. One of the ways that business has benefited from the Daley administration, and one of the reason the corporations in Chicago are so happy with the city, is that it is, we got to admit it, a much more admittedly, it's in the middle of a recession, but a much more prosperous city, a better looking city, a city where they're proud to have their headquarters, where they're proud to be downtown. I remember when I was a teenager in the late 1970s, 1980s, you didn't go downtown at night. I mean, you just didn't. It was a scary, dark, dangerous, dirty, ugly place downtown. And now it's not.
Irma, you disagree with this?
I disagree with that. I came from Detroit, too, and I moved here in 75. And we may have our, you know, just timelines different, but I just thought Chicago was a beautiful city.
Yeah, but you were from Detroit.
But I was from Detroit. That's true.
And it was bad in Detroit.
Yeah. How did we get all these
Detroit people in the room?
I don't know.
But notice how they all ended up in Chicago. And, and if you're a Midwesterner and you like living in the Midwest, people ask me, why didn't you go to New York? And I said, because Chicago's friendlier. I mean, I'm a Midwest guy. I wanted to go to a Midwest city. And that's why I'm here. And it was a city that was appealing because I had visited Chicago and I saw what downtown Detroit looked like. But even in the late 70s when I came here, it was, compared to Detroit, not scary at all. Downtown.
Mm-hmm. Not at
all. Maybe if you grew up here, different story. All right, I need to take a short break, and then we're going to wrap this up. One thing we didn't get to in all the fisticuffs here is, and I like it. I like a feisty program. Urban agriculture, we didn't talk about at all. I think we should at least touch, and water quality if we can, all right? A couple of things that let's touch on very quickly. That's Mick Dumke on the phone and in the studio, Beth Botts, Irma Tranter, Christy Weber. These days, more and more businesses are going green, appropriately, as we talk about it on this show. And that's good news, but the growing popularity of green service providers also points to the value of those who have led the way. WRD Environmental is one of them. Since they were formed in 1997, WRD's mission has been to create sustainable landscapes. They have always used locally grown native plants when possible in their design and build projects. They've used recycled, energy-efficient supplies and sought nature's balance. Simply put, put, being green is part of their DNA. Even their location speaks to their commitment. We've talked about this place today, the Chicago Center for Green Technology, one of the nation's greenest buildings. Their civic contributions towards sustainability run deep. Staff members are on the boards of a variety of green organizations, and through the years, the folks at WRD Environmental have donated their expertise to many green nonprofits. For experienced, sustainable landscape development, trust the professionals at WRD Environmental on the web at WRDEnvironmental.com.
Want to make a positive move in the housing market? Replace your siding and windows. You'll improve your home's look and energy efficiency, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling and energy needs. Siding, windows, solar and wind power, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Just looking at the song, I think I know the one I want to play here, the next one. We'll get to that in, yeah, there we go. And what was that comment we just got tweeted, Heather? Love My Plant tweeted, looks like you can't make omelets without breaking some eggs or a public park without waste in the short term.
Yeah, everybody's going to complain.
I don't think anybody expects a perfectly efficient process. But certainly the way we make decisions in Chicago could be a lot more open and it could be a lot
transparency,
more
transparency, transparency, transparency. And that's, you know, one of the things that we fought.
So did you think that he went out there and, I mean, why did he go out there and put those X's at Migs Field? And I didn't do any work on that at all.
Mm-hmm. I think
you were driving one of the bulldozers.
He reached that point where he got... He had wanted it to be a field, a park for a long time, and he just reached the point where he was too frustrated and he just wanted it to happen.
He saw political opportunity. It was in the wake of 9/11. He found a convenient excuse, and he did what he always wanted to do.
And he had just won an election.
That's why he's a brilliant politician.
And he had just won an election where he got a huge majority. So he had the political capital.
He already had plenty of political capital, more than anyone else in town. But, you know, he wasn't going to have to face the voters for another 3.5 years.
So, but don't we appreciate that about our mayor on a national level and just in the city of Chicago? I mean, isn't that sort of what disappointed us the most when he went to the Olympics and we lost? It was sort of like our mayor does lose. He is human.
It was interesting. In terms of the Olympics, as far as I can tell, he didn't understand how the game was played, and that surprised the heck out of me, one where he got totally outmaneuvered and was never actually in the game and thought he was.
But again, I think it was one of those things where nobody wanted to say no to the mayor. And that even if you knew...
And they don't. Yeah. They don't say no to the mayor. I mean, you go and you work with anybody downtown.
They don't say no to the mayor.
I mean, the good guys that did are gone. Either they're in jail or indicted or gone. And, you know, they're gone. But they did stand up to him. And they did have a voice. And it seems now he makes a note and it's an idea. And it's taken off and run with. Unfortunately, it's not vetted like through, you know, a good process. It's like, oh, must please this person. So
That's the characteristic of strong men and dictators everywhere. And I'm not kidding. Over time, they surround themselves with increasingly, you know, more loyal, weaker, you know, subservient people. And, it's one of the dangers of having an executive office without any term limits, quite honestly. They consider, and I'm not questioning Mayor Daley's love for the city or his motives. I think that he continues to do things he thinks are best for the city. The problem is when you're surrounded by yes men and you haven't been held accountable by voters, you know, you do think you can do anything you want.
And I will say that he could have accomplished the Migs Field just with a couple more public hearings. There was no reason to have that process.
Absolutely.
There was a fairly good public process with Millennium Park, but certainly not with Soldier Field, whatever. There was no listening on that.
Okay, hang on 1 second, guys. I got 1 minute to do this, and then we wrap it up, all right? It's fall planting time at SIDS Greenhouses and Garden Center, and this week you'll find savings on everything you need to get your home and garden ready for the season. In addition to savings of 40% off their entire stock of fall and Halloween decor, you'll find the best selection of fall garden mums and hardy winter pansies. This week also, save up to 75% on all remaining nursery stock, and perennials are buy one, get one free. Now is the time to plant spring blooming fall bulbs when it gets a little cooler. SIDS has a huge selection available. They have all the favorite varieties of tulips, daffodils, iris, and more. Plant them for a spectacular color display next spring. And here's a tip: when you're bringing in your houseplants from the patio in the next few weeks, check them for bugs. And if you want to use something, you can pre-treat them with Fertilom Triple Action Plus. It's an organic insecticide, miticide, and fungicide all in one. SIDS, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, are located in Palos Hills on Southwest Highway and in Bolingbrook on Napier Plainfield Road at Hastert Boulevard. Don't forget, when you're done planting, bring your plastic pots and cell packs to SIDS for recycling. We don't have recycling in the city, but we got it at SIDS. all right, so let's, where do we start? We've got like 4 minutes to do this.
Well, I think we need to look, we need to do two things. We've looked back a lot, and I think we need to look at what the challenges for the future are. We're going to have a really different world once Mayor Daley is gone. And, you know, we can't just keep talking about the mayor. We've got to talk about how we're going to make green things happen in this city in the absence of a mayor who has basically set out to make green things happen and made them happen one way or another. So, you know, I'd like, you know, we've got challenges with Lake Michigan. We've got challenges with water quality. We've got Asian carp out there. We've got wastewater that is not treated before it gets dumped into the into the river. We've got parks to defend. Mm-hmm. We've got a whole sort of, assuming that you can say, and I think you can, that Daley has a green legacy, we've got to defend that legacy, and we're going to have to speak up and get active in a way that we haven't had to under Daley.
I would say that to start with the Park District and a lot of his agencies to hire professional people for those jobs. Mayor Daley tended to put in loyalists, and they weren't, you know, he doesn't have a PhD in park and recreation. Well, we have those curricula.
But what mayor is not going to put in loyalists?
You are actually reacting only to putting out his fires. Mm-hmm. And that is not, there's no systemic plan, which is why we have problems in our field houses where children don't have programs, or the swimming pool isn't working or isn't clean or they've shut down. And you need someone who knows what a system is. There is a curriculum for it, and we really hope that in the future you have professional people so you don't reinvent the wheel every second month.
Mick?
I was just going to say it's possible to find professional people who are also loyal to you. I mean, it's not one versus the other. Of course, no one's going to hire someone who's working against their administration politically, but, you know, you can still get people who want to do the job. And I think that's Irma's point, and it's an important one. I just throw in there, it is worth talking about this mayor because he may not be mayor after May, but he's going to be very influential in this area, I think, for a long time in this city. His appointees continue to hold positions for years. Whoever's the next mayor is going to be consulting with him, I'm guessing, about how to run the city. And so it's important to continue to scrutinize his record. The second thing is the biggest challenge facing the city in the short run and in the medium run and the long run is money. It's a $655 million deficit for next year. It's expected, you know, perhaps to get even worse after that. And so I think all the discussions about sustainability, green initiatives are going to have to be tied in with economic development, which is, you know, shouldn't be a hard thing to do, but
I'm going to have to leave it at that. Okay, I mean, we got to have it. Christy, you wanted to say one final thing?
Oh, just good luck to the next guy that comes on board.
I want to thank everybody who's here today: Beth Botts, Mick Dumke, Alderman Joe Moore, Henry Henderson, Irma Tranter, Christy Weber. It's been a great, great conversation, and we're going to do this again. And we're going to be looking forward at who's running and how we preserve some of the things we have and how we can make better some of the things that did not get done under Mayor Daley. I'll tell you the one thing we'll be able to say about him. He was an interesting guy, and it was an interesting ride. We'll be back next week with the Mike Novak Show. Go green or go home.